Flyover Politic Podcast, the show for normal Americans. From his undisclosed bunker, here's your host, Tony Reed.
It's Friday Free-for-All! And welcome back to Flyover Politic Podcast, Friday Free For All. It is the 11th of May, year of our Lord, 2017. Today's show got a political article, Why Liberals Are Not As Tolerant As They Think. New York Times, problem with linking abortion to economics. The agenda killed the living crap out of this article. I mean, they were ruthless. Section 3 is, what happens when dads sacrifice their dreams for the children? Not what you think it is. It's actually pretty good. And we'll close with news and social media nuggets. So, this whole thing is so bad, folks. It's just so bad. This Comey stuff has made our mainstream media just lose it. But I want to preface it with two sound bites. I'm going to start with a Colbert sound bite showing even his bots don't know what to think because nobody's told them what to think. They don't know if they should love him or hate him or love him. And a quick bit by Tucker Carlson that kind of sets the table for my approach to this faux outrage.
Huge story that broke just minutes ago, like less than 10 minutes ago. FBI Director James Comey has just been fired by Donald Trump. Huge Donald Trump fans here tonight. That shows no gratitude at all. Man. I mean, did Trump forget about the Hillary emails that Comey talked about? I mean, thanks for the presidency, Jimmy. Now don't let the door hit you where the Electoral College split you. Thumping. My pulse is racing. He fired the FBI director who has said under oath that he's investigating the Trump campaign's ties with Russia. No rationale has been given yet as to why, but it came on the recommendation of Attorney General Jeff Sessions. I think I might know why. I think he was fired because Comey couldn't guess the name Rumpelstiltskin. Now, Trump sent Comey a letter in which he writes, "While I greatly appreciate you informing me on three separate occasions that I am not under investigation, I nevertheless concur with the judgment of the Department of Justice that you are not able to effectively lead the Bureau." Does everything have to be about him? "While I greatly appreciate you telling me that I am an amazing lover, I am leaving you for a younger woman on the advice of the Department of Justice."
Well, good evening and welcome to Tucker Carlson Tonight. Yesterday, as you may have heard by now, the president fired FBI Director James Comey. The White House says Comey got canned because he overstepped his bounds in the Hillary Clinton email investigation. Now, whether you believe that explanation or not, there's an awful lot of evidence that Comey was the wrong man to run the world's most powerful law enforcement agency, so good riddance to him. Now, under normal circumstances, an awful lot of Democrats here in Washington would have agreed with that assessment. They never liked Comey, they never trusted him, and they had ample reason to feel that way. But these are not normal circumstances. Donald Trump is now the president, which, in the view of the permanent Washington class, means that anything the White House does isn't simply wrong and immoral and stupid, but literally the beginning of the end of America itself. Now, if you watch any of the cable news yappers over the past 24 hours, you've seen it. Jim Comey's firing was a coup. It's the Reichstag fire, the Hindenburg, the Lusitania, Three Mile Island. Any number of other historical disasters, none of them quite relevant to what actually happened yesterday, but all of them awful. And that's the point. More than anything, though, Comey's dismissal represented, cue the ominous music here, a constitutional crisis.
I have not seen this much hypocrisy in my entire life. I mean, Google's so fired up that just to do some of the things I looked up, it took five or six searches, and that's just stuff I'm going to talk about. I'm not going to play sound bites because I have a really long podcast today, but there's plenty of sound bites of Schumer, Pelosi, all of them saying things just in November that now he's a good dude. I mean, this makes John Kerry flip-flops look like the 99-cent ones you get like at a gas station. I mean, these are Gucci flip-flops, full-fledged, diamond-bedazzled flip-flops rolling everywhere, starting Eric Holder to the career men and women of the DOJ and FBI. You know what the job entails and how to do it. Be strong and unafraid, duty out of country. To which Sean Agnew said, you were in contempt of Congress, but please tell us more about duty, honor, and country. David Frum, it's a coup. Somebody said, I know we're supposed to be polite and Twitter kind of cultivates this rhetoric, but Trump derangement is getting out of hand. That's spot on. Spot on. Then there's Ted Lieu, that wahoo senator. Our 11-year-old just asked me if President Trump was part Russian. That would be really funny if it wasn't so scary. Most of the people on that said, what do you, brainwash your kid? Or this didn't happen. You're full of shit. Okay? WAPO now is running a story with 30 undisclosed officials that are coming up with all sorts of stuff that isn't true. A, Comey wasn't asking for more resources. That's not why he was fired. The deputy attorney general wasn't going to quit because he got thrown on the bus. These are all lies. But they went around and just talked to 30 random people, came up with this. Comey sought more resources. It's the front page of today's paper. And the libs, Mark W. Smith, tomorrow's front page. You can see him actually slobbering. He was so excited. Dan Pfeiffer, the Washington Post, now just doing donuts in the South Lawn. Brad Jiffy, Roseland Henderman, Byron York, Ryan Adams. These are all reporters. All of them. Just everywhere. WAPO, smelling blood. Sourcing more than 30 officials. Brian Seltzer from Reliable Sources on CNN, which is neither reliable or a source. Only on that one did I see people say, list the sources. Until then, it's all bullshit. Somebody did say the only thing within this that made sense to me, I would have fired Obama holdovers day one. He should have. He just should have. But at the end of this huge article, here's the editor note. This is what everybody's breathless about. Nixonian, Watergate, the whole nine yards. The story has been updated to more precisely describe White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer's location late Tuesday night in the minutes before he briefed reporters. Spicer huddled with the staff among bushes, not in the bushes. That was all over the net. That was all over the net. Everywhere. People truly believe they were hiding. Tweets, before we get into the stupid. People who wanted Comey fired a few weeks ago are now outraged Comey was fired. Democrats have literally accused Comey of siding with Putin to throw the election. Are they going to retract all that now? John Podohertz. Come on, people. If anyone would have been fired six times in the last 12 months, it should have been Comey. But they don't care. They don't really care. They are full-fledged into the coup, into Nixonian, a congressman tweeting that crazy shit. that it is Watergate. What do people do to help march protest? I'm really asking, sir. More marching, more protesting. Resist we much in the streets every day. Disrupt all traffic. Persuade with punches. Somebody holding an impeach. Trump, Russia, treason, Russiagate. I posted it on my blog. They believe that. I mean, I just... There's very few people out there actually defend. Hey, look at the Constitution. It's his right to do it. Take a Valium, snowflake, and go back to work. You're on the people's dime. This stuff goes on and on and on. And then we get to some stuff. Democrats who criticized Comey for making a public announcement of the Clinton email investigation in the days leading up to the election came to his defense Tuesday night, assailing Trump and saying he's interfering with the Russia investigation, which he's not. Martin Henrich, President Trump's dismissal of FBI Director Comey smacks of President Nixon's Saturday Night Massacre. There's another one. Ron Wyden, Comey should be immediately called to testify and tell us the status of the Russia-Trump investigations, which aren't there. Mark Werner seems curious. Chuck Schumer did a whole grandstand, yet I can play here. Just recently from his debates, he said it. Robbie Mook, Twilight Zone. I was as disappointed and frustrated as anyone at how the email investigation was handled, but this terrifies me. Are you serious? Clinton just a week ago blamed him. Just 1 week ago, the media carried it. But at all, those that are using the Nixonian, Tim Kaine, Schumer, Pelosi, Waters, Van Hollen, Curbelo, Amash, Burr, in North Carolina, he's a Republican, but he's in a swing state, so he's saying it. Gillibrand, Nelson, Durbin, Cannerwall. Articles all over the place today inside the non-liberal media saying Schumer lost confidence in Comey. Pelosi said a mistake, it should be investigated. Hillary said it. Michael Moore, Comey fired, dirty, corrupt things afoot. The truth will all come out. The unraveling continues. Hold the election over. Dirty, corrupt. That's his tweets from November, folks. He said the very same thing. Comey's dirty, corrupt things afoot. The truth will come out. The exact same tweet. But he said for Comey to be fired in November. Sally Cohn, not surprised, guy who didn't realize how complicated it is to be president, also doesn't realize Dem's view on Comey are nuanced and contextual. So here we are. We'll get into segment one where this is the biggest outlier between progressives and liberals. They really think they're super smart, but they're intolerant as fuck. And they don't think they ever hypocritical. They evolve. Everything's evolving on the left, which means I can change my mind whenever I want to. Fact is, progressives are less mad that Hillary didn't win than that Trump did. Want Russian investigation for political and principled reasons. Yeah. Political. John Podesta weighed in, but Neon Taser nailed him. These are two tweets. Didn't you know you're supposed to wait till Saturday night to massacre people? That's for Comey's firing. The American public is getting mildly nauseous listening to Jim Comey just a few weeks ago. And he went before the Senate. I mean, none of you watched Kerry lose. Keith Olbermann, congratulations. You have just impeached yourself. In November, nope. Our one bipartisan moment. This man's position at the FBI is no longer tenable. Fire Comey. He started the hashtag. And this is just a sample. I could keep going on for like an entire show. And you know, if WAPO's rolling out the big We 30 source some shit, here's your mainstream media with every reference they think they can come up with Nixon and a few new ones.
Can we point out that the emperor is not wearing any clothes? This memo from Rod Rosenstein says that James Comey was fired for being too mean to Hillary Clinton? Does anyone believe that? Could anyone believe that? I mean, it's just absurd. I mean, suddenly, here it is in May of 2017 that he's being fired for a press conference that he held in July of 2016. I mean, this is just the most preposterous pretext. This is an investigator who is investigating the White House. And he was just fired by the White House. This doesn't happen in the United States, except on October 20th, 1973, when Richard Nixon fired Archibald Cox. And if anyone thinks that a new FBI director is going to come in and the agency will just take over and continue their investigation as if this had never happened, that's not how it works.
Jeffrey.
They will put in a stooge who will shut down this investigation.
Well, Jeffrey,
they are in charge. The political people are in charge of the FBI, not the street agents. The street agents do what they're told. And now Donald Trump will put in maybe Chris Christie, someone who will do his bidding.
Well, let me ask you this also, Jeffrey, because this letter from Rosenstein also talks about the October 28th, his letter that, of course, threw the election into a tizzy on October 28th, and it criticizes his recent testimony in which Comey said he had a choice between conceal and speak, right? Remember that testimony? And
yeah.
He says here in this letter, conceal is a loaded term that misstates the issue, and he says that you should refrain from publicizing non-public information. In other words, they are now saying that Comey should never have released that letter to Congress that Democrats charge handed the election to Hillary Clinton.
Breaking news. Jim Comey is out at the FBI. Essentially a firing. President apparently asked and received the recommendation of his resignation, asked for it. It was a recommendation we are being told by the Attorney General, Jeff Sessions. You just heard. This is not somebody that had a lot of political capital on either side of the aisle. But wow, what a move by President Trump. A day after James Comey testifies on Capitol Hill, he fires the director of the FBI, who is currently leading an investigation into the president's campaign. Let me bring the panel in. We're working on, Pete Williams is working on this story. All of this just broke. But the White House team, we will see from them any second now. Amy, Steve, Alfonso is back. All I can say is wow.
Yeah. This is something that, I don't know, I wouldn't have been that surprised had he done this in his first few in office, right? Kind of clean slate.
Clean house, clean slate.
Let's just start from scratch. But between the testimony from Sally Yates yesterday and the pushback from the White House on that, the acknowledgement by Clapper yesterday that he didn't know that the FBI was also doing its own investigation, so he can't make comments about collusion between
right.
the Trump team and Russia, make this a much more difficult sell.
And, you know, the president keeps tweeting that there's absolutely nothing going on, there's no collusion in all this, but every single thing that he does suggests otherwise, and this is going to be the moment that everybody says there must be something there, and it must be investigated. I think he's just gotten himself an independent counsel.
I don't know about that. I think the optics are terrible. I agree with Amy. I think he should have removed him from the very beginning. But remember, at the very beginning of his administration, he seemed to show confidence
That's right.
on
oh,
Comey.
That's
it
right.
Was that quick. Let me go to the White House, Peter Alexander. This came from Sean Spicer. What more can you tell us, Peter?
Chuck, so let me just give you the information that we have. I'm joining your conversation in progress right now, so excuse me if I'm repeating myself.
Okay.
This is the statement we just got from the press secretary, Sean Spicer, saying that the president informed Comey that he's been terminated and removed from office. President Trump, it says, acted based on the clear recommendations of both the deputy attorney general, Rod Rosenstein, as well as the attorney general, Jeff Sessions. The president, in a statement, says the FBI is one of our nation's most cherished and respected institutions, and today will mark a new beginning for our crown jewel of law enforcement. This statement from Sean Spicer adds, a search for a new permanent FBI director will begin immediately. We've also been given this letter. This is the letter that was written to Director Comey from the President, Donald J. Trump. It says, it's essential that we find new leadership for the FBI that restores public trust and confidence in its vital law enforcement mission. He punctuates it by saying, I wish you the best of luck. And
now calls for a special prosecutor to take over the Russia investigation. Democrats compare this to Watergate. Some congressional Democrats compared President Trump to Richard Nixon, who ordered the firing of the Watergate scandal's independent prosecutor.
And put this into context for us, because some are comparing this to Watergate.
Well, it's understandable that people are comparing it to Watergate, because, of course, what happened there is that President Nixon fired the special prosecutor because he was getting too close. And here we have the president firing the head of the FBI.
She said that it made news immediately. She was on the way to winning until James Comey made that announcement 11 days before the election, Cecilia.
Yes, she said that she, in fact, probably would have been president today had that letter not come out 11 days before the election, David. But look, I just got off the phone with sources close to Hillary Clinton, and surprisingly, perhaps, they are not necessarily applauding this move. The concern right now among people close to Clinton is that perhaps this move is related to the FBI's investigation into Russia, into President Trump, and not so much related to the past, that long history that you just mentioned between James Comey and Hillary Clinton. It is a resounding sense of anger right now and worry among people close to Clinton. They're all online tweeting about it. Her former campaign manager, Robbie Mook, says this terrifies me. Her former spokesman says, I wonder if we'll get to the bottom of Russia right now. But David, the reaction is clear. This is very much a concern from inside Clinton world about what's happening with that investigation into Russia.
On the bombshell meter, where does this rate?
This is huge. The letter doesn't sound true from the DOJ because it's not true. The letter, though, from this DOJ under Donald Trump says the main problem was that the approach by Director Comey was essentially too mean to Hillary Clinton. That is at odds with everything the candidate said. It's also at odds with what now Attorney General Jeff Sessions said at the time.
This penchant for firing people who defy his will, when people refuse to sort of fall into line, and this is what should send a chill, and this is what should wake up every Republican who thinks that it's okay to go along.
On the one hand, the White House is saying, this is all about the Hillary Clinton email right. investigation. And Trump's own letter betrays the fact that it is, in fact, about Russia.
The fact that they thought that they could turn the page on Russia by removing the head of the FBI while the FBI is investigating Russia simply guarantees that what was once a Kleeg-Lite focus will now be a burning focus.
Well, DOJ is trying to create neutral reasons that have nothing to do with Russia. And Donald Trump, in writing that sentence that he clearly couldn't hold back on, is raising his own potential criminal liability.
If you care about having a truly non-political FBI director, you must now have an FBI director that promises to get to the bottom of that investigation between Trump's orbit and Russia.
And you must now have a special process, an independent.
I don't know how you avoid it.
Has been standing by. Jeff, we haven't heard from you. What do you make of tonight's goings on?
Anderson, I got to tell you, I've been sitting here well outside the Beltway watching this fascinated. And I confess, I'm a little cynical at all of the reaction. If I can just throw out a few names, Clarence Thomas and Bill Clinton, in terms of special prosecutors, Archibald Cox and Ken Starr. When it was Clarence Thomas and allegations of sexual harassment, the world was going to end. Everybody in Washington was furious. Women tell the truth, et cetera. You move ahead to Bill Clinton, and all of a sudden, all of this never mattered. It was only about sex. When Archibald Cox was fired by Richard Nixon, it was the end of the world, a massacre. When the White House, the Clinton White House, went after Ken Starr, well, this was just fine to do. I just look at this, and this is astonishing. And, Anderson, you have got exactly the right point here. If President Trump appoints, excuse me, a very well-respected, a federal judge or someone of that nature, a career FBI agent as head of the FBI, this will vanish. And up until then, this is just a circus. It's a show, and it's terrible. And it's throughout the media. I'm not blaming all of you guys. I'm just saying this is the way it works, and I've seen it before.
I mean, no one ever fired Ken Starr, I should just point out, but do you believe that this had anything to do with the Russia investigation?
No, I think it's just very obvious. I mean, you know, in the time I've been sitting here, I've been printing out one statement after another from Democrats who demanded his resignation. Harry Reid, Chuck Schumer, I mean, all these people, and all of a sudden tonight they're defending him. It's just hypocrisy to the max. They don't have anything about Russia. If it's there, get it out. And one other thing, Anderson, I'm all for, as I've said before, an independent commission. No special prosecutors. We've had enough of those. They don't go well. But an independent commission of Republicans and Democrats on the style of the 9/11 commission, let's do it. Let's get everybody, Director Comey, President Obama, let's discuss the leaks, all of it. Get it out.
It is hitting F5 on the political analysis key to say that Democrats are being hypocrites. You can actually hold two opposing thoughts in your head at the same time. There is a basis for Jim Comey being fired. You can also be adamantly opposed as an American citizen to the purging of a senior official of our government at a time of a major investigation into the White House. I'm sorry. How can you not hold those two points of view at the same time?
David, this is not the Kremlin. This is not the Kremlin, and you're using that word, my friend. It's
well,
exactly
hey,
the problem.
You know what? This is not what happens in democracies, Jeffrey. Are you going to defend? You're going to defend this? You're going to defend the firing of an FBI director under these circumstances?
All the attacks on Ken Starr were just fine with you. Is that what you're saying now?
Can we focus on the relevant matter here?
No.
You can be.
No,
I'm sorry, because that's a rogue wave. I want you to be precise.
No.
You can be for the firing of Jim Comey and oppose a president for nakedly political reasons purging his government.
Clearly, Jeff does not believe it's purging and not political.
I've summed it up with breathless. It's just breathless. They are so excited. They hope this is it. They want an impeachment so bad they can taste it. I mean, just taste it. So to our tweets of the day, we pledge our allegiance to the collective liberation of all our communities. Where do you think that came from? Women's March. Our elected officials, if you're signing your name to a petition address to elected representatives, you might not be as oppressed as you think. In short, the latter sections on environmental justice and police violence and LGBTQIA plus the cosign of four rights and economic justice all boil down to this. We're determined to build a society in which all women, including black women, Latina women, AAPI women, I don't even know what the fuck that is, indigenous women, poor women, immigrant women, disabled women, Muslim women, Jewish, lesbian, bisexual, queer, trans, are free and able to care for and nurture themselves and their environments, their families. However, they are formed in safe and in healthy environments, free from structural impediments. I just love pointing out That's just like a fucking cult over there. One woman, you think this tweet is from a country dealing with systemic oppression of women? It's not. It's not! Southern Keeks, a woman. I mean, the very fact that they're tweeting a petition without arrest and detention in a work camp kind of supports your wild and crazy theory. Yeah! Remember, Linder Sasar. Fucking terrorist. That's the leader of that mob. Obama came out and he decided to lecture America on food. Cows are bad because of methane or something. These are my notes. We're wasting too much food. I agree with that. We do waste a lot of food. Work with more farmers to have zero emissions. It's more important not to feed people. It's all about emissions. Somewhere in there, chef chopped him at his knees saying, I must have made you like 1,000 steaks. How the hell are we going to do this zero emission cows are bad crap when you eat beef like a lot? Only one person was covering it, Charlie Spearing, and he tweeted it. But the most important part of that is Obama used a private jet and had a 14 car convoy to go do this climate speech. So important to worry about cow farts when your carbon footprint is bigger than most of, well, probably all of the cow farms where I live. Good job, buddy. Another article came out about Shattered, came in a Twitter account. This was, I don't know who the hell tweeted it, but 8 top Shattered revelations. 1, Hillary got 2 things right. First, she whipped Congressman Trey Gowdy and his crew at the amateur interrogators in her marathon congressional testimony on how she handled the Benghazi tragedy. I'm sorry, but when you say what difference it does, what does it make, I don't think that's a true statement, but okay. And she did really good at debating, which clearly is something we all don't care about. The campaign was a long slog between self-induced crisis. The narrative is largely the telling of how Hillary and her executive team effectively executed a simple, if unintended, model. Set fire to campaign, distract attention from campaign, explain away and deny the fire. Rinse and repeat. That's actually what they said, which is pretty true. Number three, I don't understand what's happening with the country. Another major conclusion of the book is that Hillary's boyish campaign manager, Robbie Mook, and his wonkish voter demographic analytics failed miserably to detect and measure the nation's concern. Hillary's aide, Uma Abedin, enlisted Minyon Moore. That's her actual name, M-I-N-Y-O-N. It's got to be maybe it's Minyon. I say Minyon. Because they all look like minions anyway, because they're just cultists. An old and trusted friend from the White House to travel with Hillary. It was an emergency call. Hillary confided it to Moore in rarest transparency that she seemed to have a flat spot in understanding the common citizen. I don't understand what's happening with the country. I can't get my arms around it. As Moore listened, Hillary asked in desperation, how do I get answers to this? That lady wanted to be president of the United States. It's because you haven't lived as an American. And it's once again what I say all the time. Liberals are really good at telling you how to live their life because they don't live your life. And I'm not saying conservatives are any better, but they don't live your life. They don't go to their district. I mean, she didn't go to Arkansas because she knew there's no fucking way she'd get elected as a senator in Arkansas. So she made up an address in New York and went to town. Number four, Hillary knew people disliked her deeply. But she couldn't find for the life or understand why, because she found herself quite wonderful. That's what these authors, these are liberal authors, not me. She never asked key two questions. Two questions any candidate should ask. Why am I running? What's the plan for fixing the gut-level concerns of our citizens? And she couldn't do that because she couldn't understand why the citizens didn't like her. And she couldn't do that because she couldn't understand why the country was so angry. President Obama was shocked at Hillary's server stupidity. This is another washover that, once again, he got caught off and he was blindsided because how can he excuse that he got hundreds or thousands of emails from her that wasn't from a gov email? So he rolled out what he got to roll out during the 8 years of no mainstream media investigative journalism. I read it in the paper bullshit. But he was upset about that, supposedly. The convention, a full-on backstage circus. Now, I want you to understand something. I'm only reading this because I want you to remember how we covered that. The mainstream media said it was the most flawless convention ever. And I was on here talking about seat fillers, walkouts, take over the media tent, and the mainstream media won't even report it because they wanted the Dems to look flawless. On the brink of disaster, its organizers enjoyed only nominal success in keeping its stunning ineptitude and internecine fighting out of view from television cameras. Our authors described a full-on backstage circus as its chairwoman was ceremoniously ousted on the convention's first day for favoring one candidate and working to sandbag the other. In numbers and volume too great to ignore, scores of convention participants booed when Hillary's name was mentioned from the podium. You never saw it on TV. The campaign had to organize a sophisticated backstage boiler room, a highly reactive call and command station to dispatch workers to the floor to physically stop anti-Clinton outbursts. I just love that. I love everything about that. And it is a direct indictment of the media. Indictment. You never knew any of that. You saw none of Trump stuff. They dogged every speaker. They made the biggest deal about the floor fight that lasted like 45 minutes, and they ignored 3 days of floor fight with the Sanders people. And number eight, the campaign had two world-class liars. Time magazine recently asked on its iconic covers, Truth Dead. They only seem concerned with the truth's well-being with Trump's. Shatter confirms that most people knew Hillary did her fair share of threatening Truth's life with signature deft and no reservation. It was hard to keep track of how many times Hillary and her press team had said things on the record that were contradicted. The authors remind the reader that when voters were asked to describe Hillary with a single word, all the descriptors available in the human language, liar, was the most frequently used. Yeah. I make it the tweet of the day, but I got a better one. Jennifer Jacobs, believe there was Trump-Russian collusion? We certainly don't have a smoking gun today. Dem Chris Murphy of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee said just yesterday. Hate tweet of the day! I'm still laughing over that last one. People, if you actually were paying attention, that question was asked by the mainstream media about three times. From Dems. Big time Dems. Even on MSNBC. It always ended with a, we have nothing yet. Yet. They're still trying to carry this out. Because remember, as proven on the show by numerous documents that we've come across, this is their plan. Just like McConnell went and said, we're going to make sure he doesn't get reelected and obfuscate on everything. The Dems are Russia. We can stop him from doing everything with Russia. So it's all politics. It's not actually, they know there's nothing there. So last podcast, we had Kurt Eichenwald. And of course, he said that everybody voted for the ACHA. I hope your whole family fucking dies. This time, on the advice of people who care, I'm deleting my tweet and restating it in a less aggressive way. So how did he write it? This is Newsweek. Once again, millions like me tonight don't know if GOP healthcare bill will pass and kill them. I hope those who vote for it someday face same anguish we do. There's nothing different in that tweet. Nothing. But Chelsea Handler, she went straight to the source. Tiffany Trump will attend Georgetown Law School in the fall because she knows the only place to see her dad consistently is in court. These are her fans. Making fun of children and people you don't like, keep it classy. I'm a fan. Kids should be off limits. She didn't sign up for this. Raise your game, Chelsea, and I'm a fan. Picking on children, loved you for years. Politics gets old. It's your career, but someone else's child, not the coolest move. You gone low to attack another family member who has done nothing to you. And by the way, I'm a fan. At least some people over there are actually still staying human, which is really good. This article is deeper than our last hate section from the 9th. We talked about mail your ashes to the GOP. Well, now Politico did an article on it. Left adopts shock tactics in Obamacare repeal fight. Mock funerals and possibly even shipping people's ashes to GOP lawmakers are among the brazen move the left is embracing. One newly formed progressive super PAC is planning to cart caskets to Republican lawmaker districts and hold mock funerals. Another activist is encouraging protesters to ship their ashes. Another progressive group are planning graphic die-in protests as they work to derail GOP plan to repeal Obamacare. Democrats, already frothing with the anger of losing the White House to Donald Trump, are seething anew over their advanced Republican plan to gut Obamacare. How many on the left want to translate that fury into political tactics meant to exact maximum pain on Republicans? Now some liberal groups and activists are hoping to use macabre theatrics to gin up voter frustration towards a Republican. It's a far more in-your-face tack. We must be far more visceral. Jason Haber, a Manhattan real estate investor who started a super PAC that he said will host mock funerals, including tombstones, coffins, even eulogies, later this month for the constituents that will be killed as a result of losing access to care. Staging a funeral has a lot of shock value, but runs the risk of overplaying the hand, he said. And you are totally overplaying your hand. Because Matt Largy tweets, Tom MacArthur Town Hall is pretty brutal. Somebody tweeted, I hope Tom MacArthur gets pelted with garbage during his town hall and then gets hit by a bus. Pictures hit insurance cap cancer survive required. Died female. Rest in peace, untreated breast. No STD treatment. I won't read it, but it's Tom MacArthur's daughter. Because during this, Grant's Frank Rotul, which I don't know if that's a woman or a guy. If I talk about my daughter too much, then so be it. MacArthur opens with a story about a special needs child to defend against AHCA attacks. MacArthur booed and hit with shame on you for a long wind-up story about his daughter. I will say shame on you, quite honestly, he says later on. So if you think I don't care about health care, and then he shouted down. Talks about his daughter. Somebody says, shame on you. You're politicizing her. Well, it was okay for freaking other people a little while ago. Okay. I put my head on my daughter's chest and listened to her die. People erupt. Other babies will die without care, too. Somebody yelled, do you have money for her care? Another one. Your daughter's dead. Perhaps we shouldn't try to kill the poorest among us. He tried to gain control. I'm asking you guys to have some respect. Can I be disrespectful on behalf of all the people you're going to kill? I want you to remember, these aren't his constituents. These are the mob protesters. And for that, all of you resistance people, you're my motherfucker.
Motherfucker,
your clothes, motherfucker.
Sewer rat may taste like pumpkin pie, but I never know because I wouldn't eat the filthy motherfucker.
Motherfucker.
It's the one that says bad motherfucker.
That's my bad motherfucker.
I just, once again, the saddest thing about all this, all right? When the Tea Party rose up during Obama, it was a bunch of white people, and they're all fucking racist. They find one guy with a KKK flag or a Nazi symbol or people with weapons, and they propagate that. When it was a black guy with weapons, they wouldn't even show his skin. They just took a picture of the weapons. Everything they did was crushed. Where is the news for this? Other than local. Where is it at? These people don't even live in the district. And they think cursing mock funerals and saying fuck you and your dead daughter is how they're going to win back seats. Are you real out there? Do you really think all you Antifa resistors, do you freaking think that's going to work? You're now becoming the people that nobody likes. What kind of influence are you going to be? I'm telling you, you guys are treading. You've gone past politics. You're making it personal. And once again, it's not a threat. It's just a statement I make every time. You want to get ugly. The problem is all those inbred hay seeds and the flock. We got all the guns. You guys don't believe in guns. So if you want a fucking civil war, you're going to lose. Unless you Apple phone us to death. Because I've read those tweets too from the resistance. So we need to take over the country. Start killing white people. It's fucking sad, man. It's just an election. We'll have another one in less than 4 years. Hypocrisy of the day, WAPO, liberal evening news tilt, not an issue. The Washington Post said the bias alarm on the front page of Tuesday's paper, Sinclair Group is going to buy up a bunch of local TV stations. We covered that a couple podcasts ago on News and Social Media Nuggets. So all your local stations are going to get sucked up. This is an actual statement. Reporter Todd C. Frankel worried the deal also has energized long-running speculation that the quiet company has ambitions to be broadcast world like Fox News. Speculation by whom? Liberals? But liberals are often described in liberal newspapers as critics of many people or in the story, opponents of media consolidation. But Frankel uncorked a sentence that is so laughable it needs a copy editor. while partisan coverage in a familiar staple on cable networks, Fox News on the right, MSNBC on the left, it remains mostly unheard of on broadcast TV. What? Really? NBC Local Nashville has covered every pro-abortion, anti-freaking religion protest. You don't see the other ones. They don't even cover the March for Life. This is a Christian-centric area. They carry every negative story on Trump during the election. I mean, seriously. Get out of here. Tale of Two Daughters, what I labeled this one. This is one tweet. The Daily 202, Ivanka Trump's life of privilege undermines the credibility of her new direction. Chelsea Clinton finally finds her political voice, and it's edgy. What paper do you think that is? Oh yeah, Democracy Dies in the Dark, and so does objectivity. I'm sorry, you guys are just too much. They followed it up with a Indiana church was defaced with Heil Trump graffiti, and they're keeping it. Buried way down at the bottom, you find out it's George Nathan Strang. They don't see who he is. The first run that it was anti-Jewish Trump supporters, white nationalists. Deep down, Strang stated that he wanted to mobilize a movement after being disappointed in and fearful of the outcome of national election. You'd have to read the whole article to find it. So instead of retracting it, they updated it with just, hey, some crazy Trump supporter put Sieg Heil on a church. It's not even true. The second one, University of Michigan, where a student was approached by a stranger who threatened to set her on fire. She didn't remove her job. That was also a made-up story that WAPO didn't retract. They ran another story, but they didn't take the title and retract it. I mean, seriously. Then there's this one, hoax countdown, 3, 2, 1. After racist notes found, students demand mandatory classes in race and gender studies. Do we remember that? Big protest, big signs, welcome to my racist campus. It was all St. Olaf College. Yeah. It was fake. It was done again by a progressive. Progressive. My favorite tweet on this one. Oh, someone better pick up that phone because I fucking called it. I was so using that. Oh, I cut off his name. That is some funny shit. Oh. So that's like three in a row, fake. But once again, it's in our hypocrisy section because the media will roll it out, won't retract it. Just like old Spicy's in the bushes. We don't do a new article saying, hey, we were wrong. He wasn't hiding in the bushes, as memes on Twitter and all you mean progressives were saying. They make it an editor note, buried at the bottom, nobody reads it. Stats of the day, ESPN, concern, drags down Disney. They dropped 2.4% in shares. Keep up with the politics, guys. Just keep it up. See where you go. I swear to God, I'm starting to watch Fox News. I don't watch ESPN anymore. I listen to the new radio news because you don't have a choice. They own everything. I mean, my local one will go to Fox, but it's the Rome is burning, dumbass. I can't stand that guy. But other than Mike and Mike, I'm not watching ESPN anymore because DirecTV decided to give us all NFL Channel for free. So I got it for free now. Woohoo! Probably during the season, they'll take it away. Oregon, and this is a stat because this is one of those stats I like covering because I used to live there. And I'm basically labeling this stat why I won't move back to Oregon. Oregon may allow drivers to choose non-binary rather than male or female for their licenses. Oh, dig this. Oregon may soon become the first U.S. state to allow residents to identify as non-binary, neither male nor female, on their driver's license identification cards. Transgender Oregonians say the change would validate their identities and make them safer as they hand over their license and restaurants at health clinics and airports. Oregon Department of Motor Vehicle officials say they have no opposition to the change, which they first announced plans to carry out last summer. Officials will host a public hearing on the proposed change Wednesday in Portland. If approved, Oregonians could change their license and identification cards beginning this summer. Instead of FRM, their license would just display an X. I'm an X! All the things going on in Oregon. Motherfuckers burning down Portland. And you care about transgender. And here's this open hearing. That's not an open public hearing. You walk in there and say anything negative. Homophobe, transphobe, you get fired, go to jail. I posted on my Facebook page, my personal one. Nobody would take up the challenge. Somebody tell me why. What's next, Oregon? You're going to have to identify as non-gendered. You can't be a male anymore. Male is bad. Indonesian governor sentenced to 2 years in prison for blaspheming Islam. And all he said was stuff about his opponent who was perverting the Quran. They got 2 years. But once again, we have politicians in this country and the resistance and all those opposing a travel ban that is the same thing Obama did. No, they just want them all come in. Sri is okie dokie. Oh, also this week, guess what? They're actually in the circuit again, and the person that pushed it, the prosecutor that pushed it, was actually asked the question by one of the justices. So my question is, if another president proposed this ban, would you find it unconstitutional? And they said no, because once again, they want to base it on unsubstantiated, word-twisting, out-of-context statements that Trump said on the campaign trail. So they're going to damage the country, most likely get people hurt from a terrorist attack because they don't like Trump. Okay, that's justice. And our last stat, illegal immigrant deported 15 times, seriously injured 6-year-old in DUI hit and run. Lexus Lake, a 6-year-old boy in San Ysidro, California, suffered a serious head injury over the weekend after an alleged drunk illegal immigrant who had been deported 15 times ran a stop sign and crashed the family car. Even worse, the boy was coming home from Disneyland. 15 times. But you want to have sanctuary cities all over the place. Seriously, that's what you want. What in the name of Zeus's hell is wrong with all these people? Seriously. We now have a party that will endanger fellow citizens, the country. They take the Constitution and wipe their ass because they hate one man. Hey, join the pack, folks. I hated Obama for 7 years. 7 years! I didn't want to endanger America. You're all a bunch of crackheads. To a music break. In segment one, I love the title of this article, Why Liberals Aren't as Tolerant as They Think.
Lay your head down, child. I will never move your man, child. faces say they don't care about you like I do, like I do. Safe from pain and truth and choice. Another poison devils see they don't give a fuck about you like I do. Just stay with me, safe and ignorant. Go back to sleep. Go back to sleep.
Lay down, child.
Welcome back to Flyover Politic Podcast with Tony Reid.
Go back to sleep. Go back to sleep. Your body's like sink to the rhythm of the watch of me. Go back to sleep. Go back to sleep.
All right, just like our last podcast, we found random surveys that show that the transgender gay agenda in regards to children was totally false. This is another study that slipped through the cracks and you didn't hear a whole lot about because, you know, we're talking about liberals. They think they're the most tolerant people on the planet. But actually, there was a study conducted, and it fell into a May 9th article in Politico. To be honest, I found it by total accident. It was on the page. I was reading something else. It was in, like, the 79th Politico article about the firing of Comey and how Trump is Nixon and yada, yada. And this shows there is no difference from the far right and the far left. I mean, there just isn't. Anybody who's got common sense realizes that. So, First and foremost, it is the 12th of May, year of our Lord. We're finishing up today. And if I seem a little less animated, I have an old army injury. And every once in a while, it just acts up for no apparent reason. So late yesterday afternoon, my neck started hurting like crazy because I had hit my head on something. And now this morning, I can't even move my neck. I might have to go get a brace and brace it, but it makes me like in level 25 pain, and it sucks. So your humble host has a heating pad on his neck. He's taking a Percocet, and he's drinking a Monster, and he's wondering how the hell he's going to work today because he can't even move his neck. It just keeps coming back. It's like a once-a-month thing, and it's either I hit it, bump it, sleep on it wrong. I don't know. I don't think there's anything I can do for it. It just happens. And so now if I could take a picture of myself, which I can't move my arms really that well to do that. I can't do a selfie. I look just ridiculous. So this article is called Why Liberals Aren't As Tolerant As They Think. It's by Matthew Hudson. In March, students at Middlebury College disrupted a lecture by the conservative political scientist Charles Murray because he disagreed with some of the writings. Last month, the University of California, Berkeley canceled a lecture for, Miss Coulter, Mino Yiannopoulos, all that stuff. So we talked about it. For years, it's conservatives who have been branded as intolerant, often for good reason, because it's Politico. And that, I highlighted that point because it's been a long time since people were firebombing abortion clinics. It's been a really long time since the right, the far right, has acted a fool. Right now, I every day in hate tweets, I'm showing the left acting a fool. But conservatives will tell you that liberals demonstrate their own intolerance using the strictures of political correctness as a weapon of oppression. Totally true statement. I would get a tattoo with that statement if I could. It's spot on. That became a familiar theme during the 2016 campaign after the election. Sean McLuhan, a policy analyst at a progressive group, Demos Action, reported that Donald Trump had received his strongest support among Americans who felt whites and Christians faced a great deal of discrimination. Spencer Greenberg, a mathematician who runs a website for improving decision-making, found that the biggest predictor for voting for Trump after the party affiliation was rejection of political correctness. Trump voters felt silence. So who's right? Are conservatives more prejudiced than liberals, or are vice versa? Research over the years has shown that industrialized nations, social conservatives, and religious fundamentalists possess psychological traits such as the value of conformity and the desire for certainty that tends to predispose people towards prejudice. Meanwhile, liberals and the non-religious tend to be more open to new experiences. Now, this data, of course, isn't coming from Baptists, Catholics, Jewish. What they like to do is just like the 76 on the dollar bullshit for women. They like to lump it all together. So they're lumping everybody in the world. And so what is the most discriminatory religion on the planet right now that happens to be chopping people's heads off and putting it on their chest? That's Islam. So they lump it together. That's a social conservative. Yeah, you get that? So they once again, remember, the progressives, the people that are out there burning shit, the people that really hate Trump, everybody on your evening news, they hate Christians. We've already proved that on the show. But more recent psychological research, some of it presented in January at the annual meeting of the Society of Personality and Social Psychology, or SPSP, which, it's a funny acronym, shows that it's not that simple. These findings confirm that conservative liberals, the religious, and the non-religious are each prejudiced against those with opposing views. But surprisingly, each group is about equally prejudiced. While liberals might like to think of themselves as more open-minded, they are no more tolerant of people unlike them than conservative counterparts are. Political understanding might finally stand a chance if we could first put aside arguments over who has the bigger problem. The truth is, We all do. And he says, we, because he's part of it. Works for Politico. Mark Brandt, an American-trained psychologist, first entered graduate school. He wondered why members of the group that espouses tolerance are so often intolerant. I realized that there was a potential contradiction in the literature, he told me. On the one hand, liberals have a variety of personality traits and moral values that should protect them from expressing prejudice. On the other hand, people tend to express prejudice. Wow, that's a misnomer. Against people who do not share their values. So if you value open-mindedness, as liberals claim to do, and you see another group as prejudiced, might their perceived prejudice actually increase your prejudice against them? Findings confirm that conservatives, liberals, the religious, and the non-religious are each prejudiced against those with opposing views. And then he repeats himself, equally. Why did he repeat himself? While liberals might like to think of themselves open-minded, they are no more tolerant of people like them. Brandt approached this question with Jeffrey Wetherill and Christina Ria in a 2013 paper published in Social Psychological and Personality Science. Where has your life gone if you're reading that magazine? Wow. You know, I do feel kind of weird every once in a while because I read Bassmaster. Well, it's next to the toilet. But it does give me good lures every once in a while. I don't know. They asked a variety of Americans about their political ideology, how much they value traditionalism, egalitarianism, and self-reliance, and their feelings towards eight groups of people, four of them liberal, feminist, atheist, leftist, protesters, and pro-choice people, and four of them conservative, supporters of traditional family, religious fundamentalists, Tea Party protesters, and pro-life people. Participants reported how much each group violated their core values and beliefs, and they assessed how much they supported discrimination towards that group by rating their agreement with statements such as feminists should not be allowed to make a speech in the city, and pro-life people deserve any harassment they receive. See, there's a sentence in there that I want to elaborate on. Their beliefs violated my core belief. That is liberalism 101. I am an American. I'm a normal American in the flyover states. That's the name of the damn podcast. Nobody can violate my core principle. I still believe that you do you, I do me. And I think nowhere in there is this ever said, because they don't want to say it. They want to say, this is bad. Liberals need to lighten up a little bit because you're the better people and conservatives are fucking horrible. But that's the core problem we have in our country right now. I mean, because you voted for Trump, I can't talk to you. I disown you. I divorce you. I hit you. I call you bad names. I hope your whole family dies. I mean, all the crazy shit we're reading right now comes from people that believe their values are the norm. And you must accept their values. That's why you have the transgender movement. That's why you have the gay marriage bullshit. That's why you have all this crazy shit that what used to be fringe, because the agenda has gotten so good at pushing, it's now norm. And if you don't believe that norm, you get labeled with a demeaning term, with phobe or ist on the end of it. And that's where our country's gone wrong. I hate nobody who doesn't believe there's a God. I believe there's a God. I don't hate anybody who believes that you should have a abortion after 22 weeks. The only time I get angry is when you tell me I'm a fucking piece of shit because I don't believe in that. I don't hate anybody who believes I have to pay for their abortion. I disagree with it. And I don't hate anybody who voted for Hillary. I don't. But that's where we are in our country. It's no longer just disagreement. That statement is the core principle of what we got off course in these United States of America. When you actually believe, you're so arrogant, hypocritical, to believe your values are the only values, your beliefs are the only beliefs, you've derailed. It's a big country. People believe a lot of shit. People worship toilet bowls. Don't give a fuck. Let them. Anyway, back to the article. As predicted, conservatives were more discriminatory than liberals toward liberal groups, and liberals were more discriminatory towards conservative groups. Conservative discrimination was driven by their higher traditionalism and by liberal groups' apparent violation of their values. Liberals' discrimination was driven by their lower traditionalism and by conservative groups' apparent violation of their values. Complicating matters, conservatives' high valued self-reliance, which weakened their discrimination towards liberals' groups, perhaps because self-reliance is associated with freedom and belief or do what one wants. And liberals highly valued universalism, which weakened their discrimination towards conservative groups, like being because universalism espouses acceptance of all. And Brandt's finding have been echoed elsewhere. Independently and concurrently, the labs of John Chambers at St. Louis University and Jarrett Crawford at College of New Jersey have also found approximately equal prejudice among conservatives and liberals. New research has rounded out the picture of two warring tribes. Not only are conservatives unfairly maligned as more prejudiced than liberals, but religious fundamentalists are some degree unfairly maligned as more prejudiced than atheists. According to a paper Brandt and Daryl Van Tongeren published in January in the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology. That's not too hard to see. If we actually had a free press that did articles on Christians and actually believed Christianity was something in this country when 70% of the country is religious, but they go with the 30% who aren't. You see more atheists lashing out at Christians and taking down everything that could be possibly referenced. Two sticks in the woods that happen to look like a cross have to be removed. That's atheist. That's atheism. They are so aggressive right now that they're following. Remember, every group wants to be gays. And the only group that got shafted in all of this is African Americans. I always say that every podcast. I know I do. But it's just true. If I was an African American, I'd be so fucking pissed off right now. Because they just went around you. The left just forgot about you guys. You got a black president, fuck it, we're over. Unemployment's higher. Incarceration's higher. Everything's higher. Nothing's changed with African Americans. But now we worry about some transgender dude who wants to piss sitting next to women. I mean, that's more important, I guess. Kind of weird. And while liberals and their non-religious sometimes defend themselves as being intolerant of intolerance, they can't claim this line as their own. And the study bias on both ends was largely driven by seeing the opposing group as limiting one's personal freedom. So again, the religious and non-religious have their own particular targets of prejudice. Perhaps more surprising, atheists and agnostics were less open to alternative opinions than Christians, and they reported more existential certainty. There it is! What I just said. They believe! The whole left does! Hillary did! All of them. They are the smartest people in the room. Brown found about intelligence in a study published last year in Social Psychology and Personality Science. Once again, a magazine's never going to be next to my crapper. He confirmed earlier findings linking low intelligence to prejudice, but showed it was only against particular groups. Low cognitive ability, as measured by a vocabulary test, correlated with bias against Hispanics, Asian Americans, atheists, gay men, lesbians, black, Muslim, illegal immigrants, liberals, whites, people on welfare, and feminists. High cognitive abilities correlated with bias against Christian fundamentalists, big business, Christians in general, the Tea Party, the military, conservatives, Catholics, working class people, rich people, and middle class people. Yeah. That's because every college is pumping that shit into your kid. That's why. But raw brain power itself doesn't seem to be the deciding factor in who we hate. When Brandt controlled for participants' demographics and traditionalism, smart people were more supportive of newer lifestyles and less supportive of traditional families. Intelligence didn't correlate with overall levels of prejudice was the final findings. In a paper forthcoming in the Psychological Science, Brandt sought to answer why there was this prejudice by building prediction models to estimate not only whether someone's political views could increase positive or negative feelings about a target group, but also precisely how much and which aspects of group affected those feelings the most. First, Brandt used surveys of Americans to assess the perceived traits of 42 social groups, including Democrats, Catholics, gay, lesbians, and hipsters. Nobody likes hipsters. How conservatives, conventional, and high status were typical members of these groups, and how much choice did they have over their group membership? Some things are seen as more generic or excuse me, genetic than others. Lady Gaga's anthem, Born This Way, was adopted by homosexuals, not hipsters. Then he looked at data from National Election Survey that asked people their political orientation and how warm or cold their feelings were towards those 42 groups. Conservative political views were correlated with coldness towards liberals, gays, lesbians, transgenders, people, feminists, atheists, people on welfare, illegal immigrants, black scientists, Hispanics, labor unions, Buddhists, Muslims, hippies, hipsters, Democrats, goths, immigrants, lower class people, and nerds. They put Democrats in there twice because they probably don't like them. Liberal political views, on the other hand, were correlated with coldness towards conservatives, Christian fundamentalists, rich people, Tea Party, which doesn't even exist anymore, big business, Christians, Mormons, the military, whites, Republicans, religious people, Christians again, and upper class people. Do you notice that twice during this, the military came up? Why does the left hate the military so much? I think it's been inbred in them that they must hate the military because of the 60s. Peace, love, and hate the military. Brandt found that knowing only a target group's perceived political orientation are goths seen as liberals or conservatives, you can predict fairly accurately whether liberals or conservatives will express more prejudice towards them and how much. Social status is a group respected by society, and the choice of group membership, where they born that way, mattered little. It appears that conflicting political values really are what drive liberals and conservative prejudice towards these groups. Feminists and fundamentalists differ in many ways, but as far as political prejudice is concerned, only one way really matters. None of this, of course, explains why liberals' open-mindedness doesn't better protect them against prejudice. One theory is that the effect of liberal unique traits and worldviews on prejudice are swamped by a simple fact of humanity. We like people similar to us. There's a long line of research showing that we prefer members of our own group, even if the group is defined merely by random assignment shirt colors, as in one 2011 study found. That was an interesting study. I was going to read some of it, but I think we're hammering the point pretty good. But they put people in shirts, and they kind of went into shirts. But I mean, that's just the way it is. I tell you a million times, as I have on the show, that when I was in the military, if you put the platoon in a room or the company in the room, it just seemed to be that blacks were the blacks and Hispanics were Hispanics and there was whites with whites and there was a group in the middle of everybody. They were the people that just didn't give a flying fuck or they couldn't find a chair, whatever. But, you know, it wasn't scientific, but kind of seemed people do associate with people who are more like them. Social identity is strong and stronger than any inclination to seek or suppress novelty. As Brandt told me, the openness-related traits of liberals are not some sort of prejudiced antidote. Brandt further speculates that one's tendency to be open or closed-minded affects one's treatment of various groups, mostly by acting as a group definition in itself. Are you an open or closed group? Supporting this idea, he had collaborators reported in the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology in 2015 that although openness to new experience correlated with lower prejudice against a wide collection of 16 social group, it actually increased prejudice against the most closed-minded group and the bunch. Open-minded people felt colder than closed-minded people towards conventional groups such as evangelical Christians, everything on the right. And unsurprisingly, closed-minded people were more biased than open-minded people against unconventional groups such as atheists, Democrats, poor people, and gays and lesbians. Research consistently shows that liberals are more open than conservative, but in many cases, what matters is open to what? See, I don't think that's a true statement anymore. I don't think liberals are open-minded, thus they accept immigrants, different minority groups, gays, lesbians, they're closed-minded. They're just like the far right who's against that stuff. They only see that that's normal. And if you're not living like that, you're wrong. I mean, we've covered on the show numerous times. I mean, let's be honest. That's the difference in the electoral map. You have the cities that live like rats in a cage. You have the people that live out with spaces. We're hayseed, ignorant pieces of shit that hump our cousin. They're the smart people with the better life that want to save the planet. Don't want to give the nuclear codes to Trump, yada, yada. So I don't think it's open-minded. Liberals aren't open-minded. They're closed-minded. They don't believe there's anything as Christianity. They don't believe that you should be able to have a belief that's against abortion. If they were so open-minded, why was the Women March excluding pro-life women? That's not open-minded. I think they like to say they're open-minded. Knowing all this, can we change tolerance levels? You might think that the mind-expanding enterprise of education would reduce prejudice. But according to another presentation at the SPSP meeting, it does not. It does, however, teach people to cover it up. Maxine Nagel, a researcher at the University of Kentucky, asked people if they would consider voting for a presidential candidate who was atheist, black, Catholic, gay, Muslim, or woman. When asked directly, participants with an education beyond high school reported a greater willingness to vote for those groups than did less educated participants. Well, here's the difference. It's just like the election. Educated people won't say things that's going to get them crushed. Down-to-earth normal people who live a life that's hand-to-mouth go, fuck you, I don't care what you think. They're telling you the truth, whereas, just like the election, people who, I'll say it, I'm not a hypocrite. I didn't tell a lot of people I was voting for Trump, but I voted for him. Because once you go in the booth, you don't have to put up with this PC police. I don't have to worry about what you think. I can pull the lever any way I want to. I think, to be quite honest, that's a misnomer, educated, uneducated. It should be honest and politically correct. Honest and politically correct. If you really broke down more people, black, I don't care what color you are, and they would honestly tell you what they think, you would find that's the norm. Not, oh no, I'm all for a transgender, Hispanic, black, immigrant president. They're probably not, but they're going to say that because they don't want to get crushed. All right, but when asked in an indirect way with more anonymity, the two groups showed equal prejudice. So higher education seems to instill an understanding of the appropriate level of intolerance to express. Oh my God, it's exactly what I just said. Not necessarily higher tolerance. Education suppression of expressed prejudice suggests a culture of political correctness in which people don't feel comfortable sharing and the truth. Why did I read that? That's exactly what I just said. And by the way, I never read that section. Holy shit. Maybe I should go do this. I'll make it less words, more to the point. According to Brandt, we've understandably received a variety of pushback when we suggest that prejudice towards Christians and conservatives is prejudice. Too many, it's just standing up to bullies. Conservatives, however, don't view it that way. Nowadays, as the right sees it, the left has won the cultural war and controls the media, the universities, Hollywood, and the education of everyone's children, said Jonathan Haidt, a psychologist at New York University who studies politics and morality. Many of them think that they are the victims. They are fighting back against powerful and oppressive forces, and their animosities are related to that worldview. And they are right. All I have to do is say gay cake. That's it. Gay cake. You lose your business. Where the fuck did that come from? Gay cake. When it's, you know, just like our hate tweets right there. When we have a society with the left being able to do whatever it wants and nobody calls them on it, where paid protesters can go all over and play constituents in every goddamn district in the country, and where agenda-driven people can go to a Christian bakery and ruin their life. Of course they're oppressed. It's just like Colbert. There's people on the left and right calling for Colbert to be fired. Nothing's going to happen. Bill O'Reilly was out in 2 seconds. There was no proof he did anything. Once again, I know there's where there's smoke, there's fire, but he was gone. Fox didn't have a choice. That never happens. When Rush Limbaugh goes on the nightly TV because he said Sandra Fluke was a slut. And that was leadoff for 3 nights in a row on that NBC News. But Colbert says cock trap and makes the news once. Well, at the back end. It is a toxic environment. Regardless of who has more toxic intolerance, the fact remains that people have trouble getting along What to do? One of the most consistent ways to increase tolerance is contact with the other side and share the experience of working towards a goal, Brandt says. He suggested starting with the person next door. Everyone benefits from safe neighborhoods, stimulating cultural environment, and reliable snow removal. If liberals and conservative neighbors can find ways to work together on the local level to improve their neighborhoods and communities, it might help to increase tolerance in other domains. You can't find a neighbor of the opposite party, that is. Progressives might see the conservative trailing history as being on its wrong side, but conservatives might feel the same way about the progressives. Way ahead of the train. Getting everyone on board simultaneously could well be impossible, but if we share a common vision, even partially, maybe we can at least stay on the same tracks. Thought it was a great, great, great study. Got zero airtime. It was on Political, and my inarticulate read is because, once again, political articles, when you cut and paste them in a Word document, are 1 inch wide. They have some setting that you can't unset it. I've tried borders, everything. But it's what we already know. If you're a normal American in the flyover states, you already know liberals, they're not tolerant. They're only tolerant of people in the group. And if you don't believe what they believe, they crush you. They demean you. There's no conservatives running around coming up with catchphrase to demean an entire group. Liberals, that's every day. We got a new thing. An ist or an obe. And unlike the article in closing, before we move to the next section, I truly believe you'd have to be living under a rock to think right now the left is way more intolerant than the right. The left is way more off base, overboard, and downright inappropriate. Everything they're doing is the worst conduct we've ever had. Ever. You have to go back to Jim Crow to find this type of terrible conduct. Because at the end of the day, I'm not equating the two, but burning crosses and burning towns is the same concept. And they get away with it. They're not even getting punished. And that's just fucking sad. So without a bumper, we're going to number two. Democrats stumbled into the abortion rift. I covered this because there's a long article that I really want to cover because they're trying everything to somehow win the argument on abortion. But statistics have gotten out so much that most Americans do know that the average American doesn't want abortion after 22 weeks, and the average American does not want to pay for abortion, and the average American already knows now after Project Veritas that Planned Parenthood is just an abortion clinic and they're harvesting baby parts and selling it like some monster. The nightly news tried to suppress it, but they couldn't. It got out there. So this is an article from WAPO. Voters in Omaha, Nebraska will pick a new mayor Tuesday in a local election that has become the epicenter of divisive national Democratic fight over abortion. The flare-up started almost by accident, but has escalated through a series of heated comments and attempts to clarifying statements from Democratic leaders until it snowballed into a query about whether the party should accommodate those who oppose abortion. The issue was a hot topic among attendees of the fundraising gala last week in Washington, D.C. for Emily's List, which supports Democratic women who favor killing babies. Some attendees felt passionately about the issue, while others said privately they felt the party had needlessly plunged into a tiff for no reason. Republicans want us fighting amongst ourselves instead of organizing to beat them, Stephanie Shirock, the group's president, said in her speech at the gala. And from what I can tell, a lot of people in the Democratic Party are happy to have the argument. While it's unclear if the row will have any long-term consequences, it underscores the difficulty the Democratic Party has in speaking with one voice right now, despite its professed unity in battling the common enemy of President Trump. I think there is room for Democrats who don't support abortion rights, but I think they would have to be very nuanced in how they talk about these issues, Illinois Senator Tammy Duckworth, an ex-soldier, said. The Democrats' party is a far bigger tent than the Republican Party is. Oh, are you sure? And you will be given a fair choice to make your opinions heard. We have a full range of folks, but at the end of the day, it's about representing each individual's right, and that means you have to respect women's rights. Not going to read the rest of the article. I just wanted to touch that because, you know, it's a key thing that is starting to happen. As I reported on the show, even in Nashville, the mayor, a female, a Clintonite who was touring with Clinton in her failed election, she talked about that during her election. Her platform had dick to do with Nashville. It was a national platform. And it's becoming more and more that we are starting to see Democrats full-fledged abortion, abortion, abortion. That's all they talk about. That's their platform. LGBTQ, we don't like racism and abortion, and it's going down to local election, which is one of the most craziest things you ever heard. Because that has nothing to do with local politics. But they're putting it there. So, this article by Lori Salza made the left lose their mind this week. It's from May 9th. And she did an opposing view. She did it in a way that she didn't say abortion was bad. She just thought the way they're arguing right now is stupid. And that brought out the agenda. So her article was the problem with linking abortion and economics. And it goes a little something like this. In recent days, Senator Bernie Sanders came under fire for appearing at a campaign stop with Heath Mello, a mayoral candidate in Omaha, voted for anti-abortion legislation as a Nebraska state senator. Mr. Sanders said he supported Mr. Mello's progressive economic position, but critics said abortion and economics were inextricable, that women on the margins need abortion so they can scramble up the economic ladder without children holding them back. I will probably say this six times during this little piece right here. You don't need abortion. You need contraception. In the age of AIDS and chlamydia and serious STDs, abortion means you failed Planned Parenthood. You failed. Because that's what you're supposed to be, right? Free contraception. But it's obvious, as we keep proving every time we do a segment on Planned Parenthood, they're not about that. Their answer to everything on the planet is abortion. So now they're trying to say it's economic because of the ACHA, and they're just rolling this out, and it makes no sense to me. People in that level should be on birth control. When we were uber poor, we were on birth control. When the birth control didn't work and we had two children and we didn't want any more, I became an it. At the age of 23, we made that decision. My wife had three periods a month. It was worse than what she was now. She's going through menopause. She was just mean. And I said, okay, fuck it. We got two kids. That's what we wanted. They're both healthy. My son was like a year old. And, you know, the SIDS thing was over. And I had to go through psychologists and everything. But I got a vasectomy. We were poor. Couldn't afford another kid. It was a little old E5. Why is that not what they push first? I just want to say it before we get it. I just don't understand it. It doesn't make any sense. Back to the article. Abortion rights are a key pillar of income equality, writes Ellen Schaefer at the Center for Policy Analysis. Opposition to abortion rights is a key factor of keeping women and kids in poverty. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, okay. That makes a lot of sense. Another commentator asserts the lack of abortion access is one of the biggest contributors to the gender wage gap. What study did you get that from? Activists see a lot of appeal and argument, a way to bridge the gap between liberal women and economic populists. But it comes with enormous baggage. Above all, it's profoundly dehumanizing argument. It reduces mothers and their children to mere economic objects, and amount to say we are justified in killing those who impede our economic progress. That's a liberal saying that. And that statement, you'll see, makes the left lose it. But I just want to tell you, that is fact. That's not politics. Your argument on the left is, I made a mistake, I have the right to kill that mistake for economics. That is the most heinous shit I've ever heard. Because once again, it's not reproductive rights, it's murder of a baby. For those who are new to the show, I am pro-choice. I don't give a fuck what you do. That's between you and your God or your lack thereof. I just don't want to pay for it, and I think there should be restrictions, because I do believe anything after 22 weeks is fucking heinous. If after 22 weeks, if it's not for the health of the mother, and you just decide at the last minute, I don't want this kid because things went wrong in your life, or you want to go back to clubbing, you're a fucking murderer. That's just how I look at it. Other than health of the mother. The mother is going to die, of course. Totally different. Parenting presents undeniable challenges, but no one argues that those challenges give parents the right to kill their children. She doubled down on it. This logic by the left, let's be honest, that means that when my son's two or three, we had to file he was 18 months old, we had to file bankruptcy. I sold my house on assumption. The guy never paid for it. I was in Korea. My wife was in Alaska. They foreclosed. SNL bailouts. They told me to go suck it and suck it hard. They'd already sold the house. Now I was going to pay for the house for the rest of my life. Lost my VA loan. Things were really tight. Fast forward, end drill sergeant. My wife was promised a job at Fort Campbell. There was no job. She was making about $2,000 a month. I was making an extra $275 a month because I got pro pay for drill. We lost it all. We had to rent. I used pennies to get gas until my wife got a job. So in their logic, I had the right to go, Zach, I love you, but we got to kill you. We can't afford you anymore. You're putting us in financial hardship. It's the same argument. She continues, it's also patronizing and patently dishonest. Of course, unplanned pregnancy presents challenges, but it doesn't have to lead to economic failure. Abortion is society's easy way out. It's a way of avoiding grappling with the fundamental injustices driving women to abortion clinics. I know, because that's my story, and the story of countless mothers I've helped confront similar challenges. When I became pregnant at the beginning of my senior year in high school, my community pressured me to abort. I grew up in a single-parent, working-class family that barely had the resources to send me to college. Doing that and helping me raise a child seemed out of the question. Feeling that a birth would make a mess of my future, I scheduled an abortion. I asked a close friend to drive me to the appointment. This woman had been in the same situation just months before, and without much contemplation, aborted her child, weeping. She explained how she was depressed and had considered suicide. She begged me to cancel the appointment, and I did. I'm still looking for a study on this, and we'll have a show on it, because we've talked about it before. There is a lot of psychological effects of this abortion that, all these little starlets in Hollywood and the Ashley Judds of the world don't talk about. It isn't that easy. Unless you're a heartless woman who has six or seven, and we've covered them on the show, that their birth control is abortion. Well, I've had six. One of those shout out your abortion things? Yeah. I moved to a maternity home, took parenting classes, and got tutoring to complete high school. I graduated my class 3 weeks after my son was born. I began taking courses at a community college. When my sister, who was caring for my son, moved out of state, I left school to work full-time. I eventually worked my way up the ladder at an investment firm, married, and had two more children. While my time as a single parent was not easy, we got by, and today my life is nothing like the one predicted by the chorus of pessimists 29 years ago. Obviously, not every woman will be as lucky as I was with a strong network of family and friends to help. But that's why we as a society have an obligation to help them. For the past 17 years, I've worked at organizations that do just that. Many of the women I have encountered believe they have no choice but to abort. Many tell me they would rather give birth, but they believe the complex, difficult circumstances of their lives, like joblessness, substance abuse, criminal records, or homelessness, leave them with no real way to raise a new child. They want an abortion. As the anti-abortion writer Frederica Matthews Green says, as an animal caught in a trap wants to gnaw off its own leg. Abortion addresses only a symptom of these women's problems. An abortion clinic for a few hundred dollars ends the life of a child whose upbringing may strain her mother's resources. Full stop. The woman will leave the clinic with still burdened by every single problem she came in with. There are better solutions. They just require more creativity and more effort. Organizations like mine can help women find jobs, enter substance abuse treatment programs, regain their children from foster care, find housing, pay utility bills, and sign up for government benefits. Such efforts require community commitment. We recently had a client whose husband needed a car to get to work. A donor sold her a car at a steep discount. Another donor purchased it for the client, and a third paid for 6 months of car insurance. We would all agree, whether anti-abortion or pro-choice, that abortion is not a solution to the host of systemic injustices driving poverty. Progressives cannot continue to claim every effort to reduce abortion is anti-woman and will lead to ruin and disaster. which is so true. And conservatives must do more than tell abortion-seeking women to go in peace and keep warm and well-fed. They must sacrifice their time and treasure to serve women in need. We cannot allow the real complex needs of abortion-seeking women to get lost in today's polarized abortion debate. Our society must not settle for leaving women who face unplanned pregnancy no hope but to abort. That is awesome. And it's so right. It's so worded correctly. It's not saying it's wrong. It's not saying, it's saying we got to have another choice. If your answer to every problem in America is fuck it, abort it, where have we gone? Remember, we don't have the numbers. 2014 to 2015, 347,000 abortions by Planned Parenthood. They won't release the numbers now. Once again, they've sold a lot of lies. And now they can't come up with enough numbers to say they give mammograms because they don't. They can't come up with enough numbers to say they have prenatal care because not all of them do. It's just an abortion clinic. That's what it's there for. Abortion clinic. So they lost it. The left lost it. Rewire senior legal analyst Amandine Gandhi began the feminist Twitter tirade. Refinery's 29 community manager Angela Lashbrook also created or reacted to the bullshit. Their tweets, Amandine Gandhi, oh fuck off. The problem with linking abortion and economics. This woman's got a shaved head and hates men. One of the lengthiest outbursts came from Renee Bracy Sherman, who writes for outlets like HuffPost. More anti-abortion op-eds and New York Times opinion by extremists ignoring race and written by people who haven't had abortions. She bashed before adding, stop letting anti-abortion terrorists write op-ed void of facts. Terrorists now. Yeah. She backed it up with language like that has gotten providers killed. Do you know how much hate mail and death threats I received because of language like that? Like what? What was the hate speech in that? She followed it up with, ugh, I just can't today. But she can, because she wasn't done. I can't believe the New York Times opinion published a piece where someone openly called people who have abortion child killers. What the fuck? I'm sorry that it goes around your nicely cliched statement of women's reproductive rights, but at the end of the day, you're killing a baby. It's a baby. It's not a clump of cells. The HuffPost senior front page editor, Chloe and Yall, commended Sherman for her effort. Read the op-ed, then read this thread, which was written someone who actually understands abortion, she said of Sherman, who has had an abortion. Lauren Rankin writes for outlets like Allure, Cosmopolitan, Refinery 29, when she's not serving as an abortion clinic escort, when hysterical. The New York fucking Times published an op-ed that labels abortion killing, and I am completely done. In a Twitter rage, she insisted abortion is an economic issue. It's also a human rights issue, a constitutional rights issue, a moral issue, a basic liberty issue. Enough. Where in the fuck is it in the Constitution? I'm still looking for it. I've read it. I don't think the forefathers ever thought that we would say killing babies is a constitutional right. I just don't. Mike Kendall from WAPO and The Guardian, my pressure can't take stupid today. And then you know Jill Filipovic, who is just a hateful, hateful, hateful bitch. I'm sorry. She's just a bitch. Yes, abortion is an economic issue. Women who seek abortions and can't get them find themselves worse off economically. They were already in a bad way, you dumbass. She had another one that's so bad, I'll cover it in a bit. Other one, for most women I know who have abortions, even perfect economic prosperous wouldn't have meant having a baby. Another one. It's also an issue of women's safety. Women refused abortion are more likely to be stuck in abusive relationships than women who terminate. A reply to it. It's beyond me how humans survive for centuries without government programs. That's what somebody said. It's true. Abortion also represented a fundamental question of freedom, independence, and building the lives we want. That and responsibility. If you can't afford a child, don't want a child, or don't want to carry a pregnancy to term for any reason, abortion is responsible, she argued. And it's not taking responsibility to force a woman to carry a pregnancy to term. For many, any pregnancy is taking responsibility. Bustle feature editor Gabriel Moss inserted, you know that my number one need was when I was an abortion-seeking woman? Getting an abortion! Oh, aren't you proud? Pro-life morons never see the hypocrisy in bestowing full humanity on a fetus of a mother's expense while calling abortion dehumanizing. Callie Boosman, broadly in Vice. That's who she writes for. Stacey Burns interpreted, it's like the New York Times went to an abortion clinic and begged one of the unhinged protesters on a sidewalk to put cowls to print. Holy shit, tweeted Tariq Moussa, writer for the outlets like The Guardian and Daily Beast. I read like one of these badly written anti-abortion blogs with awful images to try to shock you into equating dead babies with abortion. It is dead baby. These people live in a parallel universe. Jessica Blankenship, managing editor of Refinery, arguing that women only have abortion for lack of financial support is some of the most reductive, agency-robbing, objectifying shit ever. Does New York Times have a quota requiring them to run a certain number of people who compare abortion to the Holocaust? Fusion writer, Katie McDonough, gonna pitch a New York Times opinion with an actually abortion is good column, trolled Jesse Burney. Irene Carmen from MSDNC and now works for WAPO tweeted, wish op-ed writers like this were at least asked to contend with or acknowledge reproductive justice activism. What the fuck? See how they have all these nice cliche lines to say killing a baby? This isn't the first time feminist media have gone attack mode on pro-life voices. In March, New York Times similarly published an op-ed calling on Democrats to stop being the abortion party, to which the feminist media responded, fuck off. Stacey Lennox, perfect summary of how the abortion industry marginalizes women and ignores the underlying issues that drive abortion, to which she was skull drug. But Philip Lipelick had a whole article. She writes for Cosmo once again. Cosmopolitan columnist and liberal commentator Jill Flipovic argued in favor of legal abortion today, writing that it would lead to better sex. The former Guardian columnist and frequent CNN online contributor argued on Twitter that abortion was good because it allowed women economic freedom. Abortion means better economic opportunities for women. It means better and less fearful sex. That's something we usually don't want to say. I don't have any responsibility. I can just abort it. Well, I could have used birth control. I mean, you know, I hate to make this argument because it's going to piss some people off. But women want equality. Women think they don't have equality. I still, once again, we talked about it. I don't know where that's coming from. I was raised by a woman. I'm nothing but strong women around me. Where I work is strong women. I don't know where this women are second-class citizens bullshit comes from. But when you really break it down, your argument is so moronic. It makes it look like, okay, women are so frail and so stupid that they have sex and their only outlet is abortion. It's not birth control. They didn't think ahead of time. They're just lusty creatures that throw their vajayjay at people. That's your argument. I don't know anybody who lives like you. I've never met anybody. When I met my wife, she was on birth control. She didn't want to have a baby. My sister was on birth control. My mother was on birth control. My grandma was on birth control. They were strong women who thought ahead that they didn't want their life impeded by an unwanted pregnancy. But not nowadays. You women, so independent, so awesome, want to crash glass ceilings. Your answer is, I'll just get an abortion. It gives me safe sex. I can fuck like a ninja because I can just get an abortion. That is the dumbest argument ever. Flipovic has floated similar arguments before. In a December CNN op-ed, she lamented President Donald Trump's election because sex is about to get a lot less fun. She argued that in addition to usual benefits of abortion, more of us are able to have sex without the anxiety of pregnancy to enjoy the unique and fundamental human pleasure that sex creates, and to tend to our relationships without an interruption and emotional devastation that an unintended pregnancy can bring. Emotional devastation. Needless to say, this is a 2015 recipient of the Maggie Award from Planned Parenthood, and I just can't. Everything in that op-ed was spot on. An abortion is not going to fix the financial problems of a woman who got the abortion. And I still can't understand why the first thing liberal media, Democrats, and Planned Parenthood's evil fucking witch, Cecil Richards' mouth is abortion. When there's birth control everywhere, there's patches, IUDs, foam, rubbers, pills, shots. I'm astounded. Just astounded. Because every time I see a shout out to abortion, disgusting Twitter thread, I've had four abortions. They fixed my life. Well, it's clearly obvious it didn't fix your life. Because you haven't figured out what birth control is. Jiminy Crickets. I just can't believe I said Jiminy Crickets. Okay, to music break in our next segment, which is what happens when dads sacrifice their dreams for children. Not what you're going to think it is, and we'll go straight into news and social media nuggets.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Flyover Politic Podcast with Tony Reid.
All right, I came across this because, you know, I'm a dad. You know, I've got grown kids and stuff. But there's a lot of things you go through in life and you feel like you've given up on your dreams. You have your male breakdowns, your midlifes, all that kind of stuff. You know, mine was a Jeep, you know, because I don't cheat. So I wasn't, like, looking for a young model, which, once again, I got to do a whole – I think I'll do a segment on that. I never understand these older guys like my age in the 50s going out with some 20-year-old. I've said it on the show. It's like, once again, might look great, but what the fuck are you going to do with it? Jesus. Anyway. So this one was What Happens When Dads Sacrifice Their Dreams for Their Children by Brian Ward, founder of the Third Way Man, which is a – I don't know what it is. But he's trying to do two-minute reads. And this one hit me, and I just thought it would be good for anybody out there who's a dad, or males in general. It's 2033. Your firstborn is visiting, and as you sit full-bellied at the dinner table, you begin to reminisce. You recount with laughter the camp out when the tent leaked, the Florida trip when the minivan broke down, the old lawnmower you had to yank on 100 times before it would finally start in a cloud of blue smoke. God, I remember those days. And then comes a moment of silence as you're both reminded of the underlying cause of the story beneath these stories. That money was always tight, that the only camping gear you could afford was that crappy 49 department store tent, that all you could afford to drive was that 15-year-old minivan that almost smelled like gym socks. That's me. I actually had one of those. Your chest begins its thudding, the old stab of guilt, the old anger, not having provided your family with a much better life. For a moment, your face falls. But then you trot out the old consolation. Well, we didn't have much, but we had each other. At least I was there for you. Your child has heard this line their entire life, each time responding with dutiful nod. But this time you see nothing but a pained pause, and then a new response rippled out of their mouth in a slow wake of devastation. But Dad, you weren't there for us. The words continue like a knife slowly carving your flesh. I know what you tell yourself, that you chose to scale back your business, eventually shut it down, that you gave up your music and a lot of other dreams so you could spend more time with the kids. That you chose time with family over money and accomplishment, but the truth is you weren't there for us. I know you want to think we had this amazing, frolicking childhood full of poor but happy adventures, but that's not how I remember it. I remember you going through the emotions. I remember the forced smiles, the faint excitement. One look at your hollow eyes was all the proof we needed. You weren't there. Not really. You were half-hearted, Dad, because you were playing it small, and even though you didn't want it to matter, didn't want it to bother you, it absolutely did. You didn't know how to create a bigger life for your family, so you retreated to a smaller corner and pretended you never really wanted a bigger life anyway. Worst of all, you put the guilt on me. You made it seem like being a father was so demanding, so all-consuming, that your kids made it impossible to achieve anything beyond mere subsistence, like it was us that kept you from greatness, not your own lack of will. I never asked you to sacrifice your dreams for me. I never wanted to be your excuse for not reaching higher. So as much as I love you and as much as I appreciate the time you did spend, I can't go on pretending that what you did was heroic or some kind of higher choice. You settled, Dad. That is the hard truth. You gave up on creating a better life for us. You used us as an excuse to play it small. That night as your wife sleeps beside you, your eyes bore through the ceiling and out of the planet bile in your mouth. You feel deep, wrenching anger. And one five-minute conversation, your firstborn took your long clung to excuse and shredded it before your eyes. And so you find yourself deep lost in the old, familiar, excruciating way you did not know you were still capable of. The old wound you thought to be healed has been broken wide open again, as bright and pulsing as the day of the first cut. It's one thing to fail to create a life of abundance and expansion for your family through poor strategy or effort or circumstances. That can be changed because you can always, at any moment, choose to forge a new path. But when you absolve it in a sanctioning story, when you institutionalize the failure by weaving it into the very fabric of your family mythology, that is a tragedy that can poison generations. So stop with the treasonous stories. Stop with the story of your loving sacrifice. Stop with the story of how I can't do X because I have a family. Stop putting the burden of your surrender on their shoulders. No matter how squalid the house, no matter how scoffing your wife, no matter how destroyed or pathetic your career, no matter how vertical the walls of your pit, kill all temptation to settle and accept. Kill the part of you seeking excuse. Hold for yourself a standard of unrelenting expansion. Commit to a life of kingship and largesse. One, imagine in detail the highest level of health, wealth, fulfillment, adventure, and reach available to you and your family. Two, determine what courageous acts you can take today now to move you and your family closer to that position. Three, do it again every day as long as you have breath. And as you become again the man who climbs, you will find to your amazement that your striving leaves you not depleted but strangely fed, that the greater the work, the deeper, the truer the rest. Your problem will not grow fewer. In fact, they will multiply and come to you in increasingly finer vintage. But as you face them, as you live out kingship, your commitment will make you finally fit for the task. Your heart will pump clean, your eyes shining clear, your lungs rising like blacksmith forge, because you see it now. You can trace the trajectory of your inevitable rise. You are no longer the man who retreats behind cover of family. You are the man who advances relentless precisely because of them. He closes with good news. It's not 23-3 yet. You have time. So change your life, reboot your vision, ratchet up your commitment to making the visions manifest. Take whatever scraps of light and heat you can find, ball them up, and build a new life. Each day as you rise from your bed, resolve anew, aspire endlessly. Don't make your children your excuse for mediocrity. Make them your inspiration for greatness. Refuse the cold ash. Light your life on fire. Interesting article. I see where he's going with it. And I agree. Listen, I did 20 years in the Army. That's hard to be a parent. There were a long time that I wasn't here. There was 18 months when my kids were toddlers. There was 5 years at the end because of the wars and assignments. Because I went to Korea, war, Mojave, where I didn't see them. And to be quite honest, your kids never appreciate it. We have a generation of children that all they look at is the negative. I remember my daughter, and I'm not doing this to be mean, saying she didn't care I was going to war. You're never here anyway. That was her dealing with me going to war because we knew we were going. I remember a son who was my little buddy, and then I came back from those 5 years and didn't want nothing to do with me, and he still doesn't. And there's a lot of times I laid around and I felt like a terrible parent. I had failed. I wasn't there for my kids. I should have got out of the Army, blah, 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 blah. But then it went around and I realized I did provide for my kids. They had a great life. They're not going to say it. And I'm sure if I went to my wife's or my daughter's Facebook feed, I'm a terrible parent. Her mom's a terrible mother. We didn't give her any love. She's just a victim of everything because she's a progressive. That's how they look at it. And my son would say the same thing. But unlike this article, I don't really see now, after I was successful in the military, wasn't great, but I was successful, was offered eight, and then I got out. And I climbed the corporate ladder in a company, was very successful in 11 years, and now I have a cush job that doesn't amount to shit. I'm introduced as, well, he used to be, and he used to be on all these boards in the community. He was a guy doing all these community volunteer things, and now he's just some guy. It just happened the other day from a city councilman introduced me to somebody in Walmart. I was a has-been, and it pissed me off. But then I correlated. The reality is, whether anyone wants to believe it, and this is going to sound less than admirable, nothing you do on this planet will live after you. Unless you cure cancer, unless they build a statue of you somewhere, you're going to be like every other sod that walks the planet. You're going to go away and people are going to remember you just like they remember me in the Army. Remember that chunky sergeant that cursed a lot and dipped constantly? They're not going to remember you. What will live past you is your family. So as much as my kids hate me, and at this point in time, I don't like them, I will be remembered for being a good father, a good husband, providing for a family. They never needed food. They never needed a roof over their head. They always had presents at Christmas. They never had to use a whole lot of hand-me-down clothes up in certain chapters of our life when we're super poor. They didn't want a lot. And if you can accomplish that, that is your accomplishment. Let's be honest. All of us have dreams. Most of them were never going to be attained. I can play guitar, but I was never going to be in a rock band. Just wasn't happening. That was one of my dreams. I want to be an astronaut. Colorblind. And I'm too tall and too chunky. Too wide. Fireman. Policeman. School teacher. These are all things I wanted to be. I don't think it's a failure because I wasn't. Because the reality is when you stop dreaming, you're kind of dying. I still dream of sitting on a stage playing some song and having the people sing it back to me. It'll never happen, but that doesn't mean I can't have that dream. And I think as men, we really got to look at what you do accomplish. Your greatest accomplishment will be being a good husband and a good father. Those are your accomplishments. If you think being the CEO of a fucking Fortune 500 company is going to bring you happiness, I'm sorry to say I did it for 11 years and I made a shit ton of money and I was never happy because I was never home. Everything comes with some kind of pain, some kind of sacrifice. So I think maybe more often than not, there's nothing wrong with saying, well, I was going to be this, but I raised my family. It's not an excuse. That's a reality. That's what I decided to do. And you know what? I'm really glad I did it. That approach to me is more healthy than going, you fucked your whole life up because you didn't challenge yourself and go after the dreams that you never were going to attain. Because most of our dreams are dreams. They're things that we can't do. Doesn't mean we don't strive for them. But majority of the stuff you think about, it's unattainable. You're not going to be that. You were never going to be that. I knew when I got out of the Army, I wasn't going to be a teacher. There was no way to raise two teenage kids and be a temporary teacher and go to full-time college on an Army pension. Wasn't happening. Not happening. Just a reality. But I don't think I'm a failure because I didn't do it. A wise man told me once, you look to be something, you think you have to be this. And he touched my family photo and said, but you're already a success. It took me years to understand what he was saying, but he was right. As much as it doesn't seem like it now, because my kids and I are kind of in a bad space, I raised a family. I provided. They were happy and loved. I was a success. To news, social media nuggets.
Now it's time for news and social media nuggets. The crazy stuff that makes your host lose his mind.
Try this trick and spend it. Yeah. You have a collapse, but there's nothing in it. And you'll ask
Military Corner. President Trump's tweets are a goldmine for foreign intelligence. Classified information is important, but an ongoing look into the president's head is, in many ways, more valuable than any transitory secrets. Tom Nichols, May 9th. Task and purpose. Totally agree with it. What he's saying this, and I'm not going to read it because we've done a lot of reading today. It doesn't matter that he's not talking about classified information. You're seeing the way he thinks, ticks, believes, breathes, everything. And do we want foreign countries to see that? I would say no, we don't. So it's one of the big things that I don't like Trump's tweets, because he's releasing too much into his mind. People are seeing it. People will react from that. And to be quite honest, one of those people is a fucking resistance who are still freaking out because of his tweets. I don't know what the hell Priebus is doing, but he needs to unfuck that shit like yesterday. The Air Force MQ-9 Reaper drone just got a whole lot deadlier. The drone is already the deadliest UAV in the U.S. Air Force arsenal, designed with a payload capacity of 3,700 pounds and armaments of AGM-114 Hellfire missiles and Paveway 2 bombs. It's no wonder that the Air Force officials announced in February that the Reaper would gradually come to replace the iconic MG-1 Predator drone as a fixture of the global war on terror. On May 5th, officials at Greech Airfield in Nevada announced Monday that airmen from the 432nd Wing Air Expeditionary Wing and a successful deploy to GBU-38 Joint Direct Attack Munition, JDAM, for MQ-9. That's a 2,000-pound bomb. Seen him. Got knocked on my ass. Scary. Scary. Saw like 14 of them fall like a click and a half away from us. Knocked me on my ass. So, you know, it's getting to the point where the Reapers and the drones, I mean, they are going to be owning the airs. That's pretty much what we're going to have in the future. I won't be surprised that we start wars with a freaking wing of drones taking off and starting the initial onslaught in a bombing raid, and it won't be jets. Which, it's kind of scary if you think about it. It's Terminator. Judgment Day. That was a little weird. Wheelchair-bound 90-year-old woman beaten. This story is fucking horrible. 98-year-old, I'm sorry. Jean Knox, 98, sat in a wheelchair before a judge and described the terror and humiliation lying in bed, pretending she was asleep while two teens broke into her home, ransacked the house, and poured maple syrup all over her body. At first, I thought it was blood. Sitting in a wheelchair in front of the court Tuesday wearing a mauve shawl, matching mauve slippers, pink lipsticks, and gold earrings. Jean Knox, traumatized gray-haired lady, listened as her son read aloud her victim impact statement. The teens, 16 and 17, who cannot be identified because they're Utes, broke into the home through a window after a boozy night in December. They trashed the elderly woman's tidy home, smashing eggs, syrup, cooking oil, ketchup, and peanut butter on the walls, floors, and ceilings of her room. What the fuck is wrong with you? Seriously, what is wrong with you? Damn grandma. Good Lord. This one freaked me out. I actually got this off the Dan Lebatard show with Stu Gatz. I'm thinking about doing a segment on my Monday podcast because I love Stu Gatz weekend observations. So I'm thinking about doing the FOP observations without the annoying beep. I'll just get an annoying song. Deer caught eating human remains for the first time. There's a picture that I posted on my blog of the deer having a human bone. It looks like a rib in their mouth. Animals most likely chewing dry bone to stock up on minerals during the winter months is what the picture caption says, which scares me. Scientists have discovered the first instance of a deer eating human remains. The animal was caught mid-feast by a motion-sensitive camera at the Forensic Anthropology Research Facility at Texas State University, a 26-acre area where forensic scientists study how human bodies decompose in the wild. The reaction from the white-tailed deer was an unexpected crunch. Deer are mostly herbivores, although they have been known to scavenge small mammals or birds and occasionally eat other meats. As documented in the Journal of Forensic Scientists, the experts explained that the animal captured on camera was the first known photographic evidence of a deer gnawing human remains. The deer was scavenging when it came across a decomposed body, which had already been feasted on by vultures. Experts watched as the animal held the bone in his mouth like a cigar on two occasions. He was chewing the bone. The picture just puts chills down my spine. Ohio student suspended, wait for it, for liking a photo on Instagram. Wait till you hear what it is. A middle school student in Ohio was suspended after liking a picture of a gun on Instagram. The seventh grader tells news station WXIX he didn't think he did anything wrong. The following morning, Zachary Boland said he was searched for weapons and told he would be disciplined. He was suspended for 10 days. He never shared, he never commented, he never made a threatening post. Just liked it, as his father said. The boy's parent received a note explaining he was suspended for liking a post on social media that indicated potential school violence. Do you think it was a real gun? No, it was an airsoft gun. But school administrators were concerned about the caption that read, "Ready." The superintendent released a statement. Any social media threat will be taken seriously, including those who like the post when it potentially endangers the health and safety of students or adversely affects the educational process. They then lifted the suspension. That makes the Pop-Tart look sane. The Pop-Tart gun. This is what's wrong with our school systems, where you just have liberals running it. They hate guns so bad that you like a picture of a gun, and now you're freaking Dylan Roof. Good Lord. Good Lord. People notice what's in the mom's left hand immediately. Reporter picks to Facebook. This is another one. Washington State mother made a brilliant post to social media about gender equality laws that, needless to say, got under the skin of liberals. But as usual, if someone does something that upset a liberal, we can assume she must be doing something right. Kirstie Merritt dressed to prove a point on Facebook by dressing up like a football player and asking, "Does that make me a football player?" She did the same with a Pirates costume. Some might consider her comparison silly, but she has a point, and her point is that a man wearing a dress and heels is still a man, and that was a picture she put down. It's no more complicated than that. However, you'll never convince a bunch of whiny LGBTQ plus 4 people because they're too busy crying about equal rights to be bothered about the implication of those rights. The post came last year after religious liberty legislation was passed in several states, including North Carolina, and has become a hot topic. Specifically, the issue of gender equality and who can use a bathroom. Transgender men have argued that they should be able to use women's restrooms, blah, blah, blah. Merritt's photographs reported to Facebook on her false claim of nudity, but as you can see, she's fully clothed. It's Merritt's message. Liberals can't stand. Apparently, they'll attack her any way they can, but they're fighting the wrong cause. And those pictures are awesome! And she's right! She should have, like, put on a Afro wig and says, "Does this make me black?" Because that's the other way they're doing it. It's just, the post she got was 112,000 times liked and shared 50,000 times. I think there's more like us than them. Sad thing to report, Kathy Berman, wife of our colleague Chris Berman, died in a car crash Tuesday in Connecticut. I actually sent an email to ESPN on this. Berman was such a great guy, and we've covered him on the show for those that aren't football fans, but that's super sad. He was such a great dude. He just really was. So I hope God helps him through this time. He's such a good dude, and that's a terrible loss. I can't even imagine going with that. I know if I lost my Gigi, I would just fall apart. I had an article on here that I was going to talk about a school actually segregating, but then I found a great soundbite from MRC, and since we haven't done Uncommon Sense in a long time, here's MRC's Uncommon Sense on that subject.
Welcome back to another edition of Uncommon Sense. For MRC TV, I'm Nick Kingadas. This is what our country has come to, folks. Black students at Harvard have raised money in order to have a blacks-only graduation. Didn't people used to fight and sometimes die to end segregation? You would think going to Harvard would have taught these students something, but evidently it didn't teach them that history repeats itself. The actual struggle of black people, not the manufactured struggle that these students are holding this event for, saw true leaders persevere and dream to see a day when little black boys and girls will be holding hands with little white boys and girls. Martin Luther King Jr. would be supremely disappointed by this sudden turn back into segregation carried out by people of his own race. A female student who is graduating with a master's degree in education policy might want to stay in school after intentionally pushing an ideology that really hasn't affected her. If it did, she wouldn't have been allowed to attend Harvard. Here's what she said. There is a legacy of slavery, epistemic racism, and colonization at Harvard, which was an institution founded to train rising imperialist leaders. This is a history that we are reclaiming. Here's the thing I don't get about these social justice idiots. If a place is so inherently evil to your segment of the population, why would you go there? They go to places that they claim are evil because it doesn't currently affect them, and they can push an agenda while everyone else stays silent, because if they don't, they'll be called racist, sexist, misogynistic, homophobic, Islamophobic, transphobic. I could keep going, but you get the idea. People are scared of being unjustly labeled, much like the leaders of the civil rights movement that were attempting to end the varied labeling of black people. It's kind of ironic that radical liberals, indoctrinated students, and the indoctrinators, otherwise known as professors, are putting back in place the very things that their ancestors were fighting to the death to get away from. Way to go, class of 2017. Now you can throw your caps up and celebrate like it's 1959. Are we going backwards as a society? Let me know in the comments section, where I will reply to as many comments that warrant a reply. Give us a subscribe and don't forget to give this video a thumbs up. For MRCTV, I'm Nick Kingada.
In the words of Van Jones, preach, my brother. It's totally true. Shit's out of control. Detroit school to hold a Muslim girls only prom. Segregation's all the rage today under the banner of social justice. More and more schools are dividing their students in increasingly niche groups, provide them with safe spaces. With the goal of creating a safe space, Detroit schools have set out to hold a girls only prom to celebrate traditional Muslim culture. I am telling you, they are so close to Sharia up there. It's not even funny, and it scares the shit out of me. Just scares the shit out of me. On the same lead, high school takes back yearbook with build that wall. Other inappropriate quotes. Rockingham, North Carolina. All the yearbooks that have been distributed at the Richmond Early College High School near Rockingham have been taken back by the school after some senior quotes were deemed controversial. Graduating students of the 10-year-old school, which has 259 students, were allowed to share a quote under their picture in the yearbook. After the book was published, officials in the school and district administration found several of the quotes inappropriate, including one credited to President Trump, said district school spokesman Ashley Michelle Fublin. If you have a hyphen name, you're a douchebag. The Trump quote, which said, build that wall, had been slammed on social media by some students. Another called it racist, hurtful. After the Rex announced on its Facebook page that it discovered the errors and inappropriate comments, many people voiced their opinions both for and against the decision to cancel the book. What the fuck over? What? Build that wall. Once again, need some conservatives in our schools. Donald Trump Jr. accuses Twitter executive of censoring his tweets. Instagram posts Thursday morning include the hashtag Obamacare, hashtag censored, hashtag Twitter, hashtag free speech, hashtag thought, hashtag stupid. Why the hashtags? Well, Trump Jr. seems to believe Twitter is censoring him on the platform. To summarize, this is his tweet. Another one bites the dust. How much more will this drive up Obamacare premiums? Here's what he's quoted tweeting. A Bloomberg story on Obamacare tweeted by the news aggregate site Drudge, dying, Aetna to quit all Obamacare exchanges. I can see the tweet just fine, so can he, but apparently other users on the platform, including his wife, cannot see the tweet. Instead it reads, this tweet is not available because it includes potentially sensitive content. sensitive content. I told you that was going to happen. Conservatives silenced, liberals not silenced. That's how it's going to go. With the faux news fiasco. This one's sad. Hatchery mishap kills 300,000 baby salmon. As many as 300 baby salmon died Wednesday inside the temporary holding ponds. The Department of Fish and Wildlife announced Thursday that a full-run Chinook died when water flowing to the fish stopped. It was a faulty switch. That's going to hurt fishing over there, because let's be honest, there, you know, you don't get a whole lot of fish runs anymore on the West Coast because they're so doggone save the planet shit. Get a couple day run, that's it. Another weird one was 70,000 bees found in a bedroom wall of a retired New York Police Department detective. Thousands upon thousands of bees are found living in a wall of former NYPD detective living in Long Island. They opened it up. There's 70,000 bees. That's scary. How do you not hear that? Even scarier, sushi warning as patients found with live worms writhing in their gut. The growing popularity of sushi could fuel a rise in deadly parasitic worm infections. Raw fish can carry tiny worms of bearing human gut if eaten, a condition known as anaesthesia, which can cause severe stomach pain, vomiting, and fever. However, in severe cases, it can cause an anaphylactic reaction with the parasite triggering an erratic heartbeat and respiratory failure, which can be fatal. I love sushi, but I just don't know if I want to deal with that. That's crazy. That's just crazy. Ugh. Shocking video shows parents viciously attacking five female high school students in revenge for an attack on their child. One teen family member came to school and allegedly attacked students. The incident took place on Tuesday at Knights High School in Palmade, California. Parents of the students were brutally beaten, reported incidents to local police. Authorities are investigating the incident. The kid video shows students from Knight High School in Palmade, California, yelling and standing in a huge circle as an adult attacker punched, kicked, and swung the victims around the air. The five female students reportedly attacked an incident that occurred on Tuesday. One victim was slammed to the ground, and an attacker jumped on top of her and punched her repeatedly in the face. Need I say, that's pretty bad. This one freaked me out. Massive creature washes up an Indonesian island, but what is it? A giant carcass found washed up on a beach in Indonesia's central Maluku province puzzled locals and authorities trying to identify the massive creature. The carcass was found on Halung Beach on Seram Island. A 37-year-old man said initially mistook the huge fleshy blob for a stranded boat, the newspaper reported. And I don't know. It's probably a whale. It looks like it's part of a whale. Like the whale died and was getting eaten. It was freaking gross. But what's grosser? Niagara Falls of feces. A broken sewer line sent raw sewage flowing out of a basement toilet and bathtub this week in Aberdeen, New Jersey. Owner Louise Smart Lodeholt, if you got a hyphen name, you're a douchebag, described a river of feces flowing nonstop throughout the basement where she lived. I mean, feces is pouring out of the toilet, pouring out of the tub like a river. Niagara Falls is coming here, she said on the phone. Oh, that's just fucking horrible. This one's horrible too. Police, woman followed, then threatened Congressman Dave Kustoff. A Weakley County woman was arrested and reportedly following Congressman David Kustoff from Tennessee and then threatening him. Wendy Wright followed a car down Highway 45 Monday afternoon. Inside the car were Congressman Kustoff and an aide. Wright reportedly followed the car after it left a town hall on UT Martin campus. And a police report states Kustoff and Devant felt they were in danger of being forced off the road. When they pulled in the driveway with someone they know, Wright reportedly ran car and screamed while banging on the car. So they reportedly blocked the car until police were called and she ran away. Wright later posted about the incident on Facebook. She is charged with felony, reckless endangerment. You can totally see on her face, she's 100% liberal. Liberal! Telling you. And once again, even though I know in our lead section The Washington Post tells you there's no bias on local TV. Guess what? I didn't hear about that this morning on local TV. Argentina has its first transgender chief of duty. Anelia Pasatino served in Argentina Federal Police as a man for 20 years. Then she became a woman. She's smiling these days, though, beaming pride to be wearing a police badge again, and the sign on her office door reads chief. Nearly a decade after psychiatrist reports said Pasatino suffered from irreconcilable illness that made her unfit to serve, she was welcomed back to the police force. This is a milestone, she said. I'm the first transgender police chief in Latin America. It's an unprecedented and important step to show Latin America and the world that we're an open institution. Even with the wig, she's 100% dude-like. I'm sorry. It's just not there. And our last, before a lighter fare, study. 89% of college reported zero campus rapes in 2015. Most U.S. colleges, 89%, reported zero incidents of rape in 2015, according to American Association of University of Women analysis of data provided by schools. Reported is a key word. Just because school has no rape reports doesn't mean there's no rape. It's a USA Today article. Gotta get that in. The findings are likely not to reflect the true state of sexual violence amongst college students, as the majority instances go unreported. In fact, 2014 report by the U.S. Department of Justice estimated 80% of student victims don't report their rape. Still, the 2015 AAU report isn't as rosy as the previous year. 91% reported zero rapes based on annual crime data. I'm only covering that because it's a nice way to show that even when the data doesn't support them, they still get in their bullets in the media. And since we've been covering that for the last two podcasts, transgender, who's more tolerant, it doesn't matter. The left's agenda will never stop, regardless of data. Facts will not get in the way of their narrative, my friends. Never! So, to our lighter fare, action figure therapy, Force Fun Day, not safe for work.
Bill asks, why do mandatory fun days have to suck so hard? Try turning it into a mandatory ejaculation day. You know, where you like sneak away every 5 or 10 minutes to beat off in a porta potty or some other semi-private area. That shit will chill you right the fuck out. Hell yeah. Zach, look at my nuts, ask. Dear Jungle, what's your favorite part of going to the gym? Accidentally walking into the ladies' room naked. The shocks from all them security guards' tasers really gets my crotch donkey hard. Hell yeah. Travis asks, Dear Jungle, how do you cure a Jägernog hangover? Trick question, man. There's no such thing as a hangover as long as you commit to staying perpetually buzzed, if not drunk. So, bottoms up, my friend. Just don't drink and drive. Use Uber, or get yourself a sweet Razor scooter with light-up wheels and shit. You know, keeping it safe and stylish. Hell yeah!
Funny, funny stuff. Got a whole bunch coming for the next podcast. Ranger Up released one, and I found another one that was pretty hilarious. So we'll put that on our podcast coming up on Monday. So this wraps up another episode of Flyover Politic Podcast. Please feel free to share this with family and friends. Leave a comment about the track by sending an email to foppodcast@gmail.com. foppodcast@gmail.com. You can get this show on SoundCloud, Podcast Addict, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, iTunes, Blueberry, and Stitcher. Remember to check out the Flyover Politic webpage, which can be found at foppodcast.com. foppodcast.com. It's a theme. To see links to feeds for the show, links to our Facebook page, and email us. There you will see also links to every episode on the episode release page and my blogs on the blog page, which I released a blog yesterday about this podcast. Finally, at foppodcast.com, you can suggest segments for the show or just send us a comment. Next podcast is going to be, drumroll, the 15th of May. We'll release it in the morning, because I'm working nights next week. Remember, with all this PC political stuff, the endless gnashing of teeth by the resistance, we can get a little distracted and miss the most important thing standing right in front of us. That is our family and friends, the people we love. Life is pretty damn good, and it goes by way too fast. So hit pause on this crap and enjoy those special people in your life before it's too late. So until Monday, my friends, have a fantastic weekend. Enjoy your family. Enjoy the great weather. If you're living in the South, we actually have some sunny skies in the low 80s, just like summer's around the corner. And thank you all so much for listening.
The bodies hit the floor.